weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
To Johnny's and Afric. It's Monday, the 27th of May, and this is Game On. Well, we're just recovering from a whirlwind weekend of brilliant sport. It was a memorable one.
It most certainly was, and to talk us through all the action, we have Keane Tracy, Alan Cawley, Niall Moran and Shane Stokes. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
We have a packed studio, as we like to have on a Monday. Alan Cawley is with us, so is Keane Tracy. And because there was so much happening, I think that it's very apt that we start with our sporting highlights so we can try and reflect all of the action. Alan, what was yours?
Another manic Monday, yes, Marie. Hello, by the way. And I have two this weekend, Marie, because I'm going back to Friday night, obviously my own game, and it was a huge game in Tala. We were discussing it before I headed up, and Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers. And I had said to you before the match, I didn't think Shelburne could win the league. Now they can, after watching them on Friday night. And I suppose if you look at the start of the season, nobody would have predicted that they would have been title challengers. Inwardly, they probably would have hoped to have been, maybe, but nobody probably foresee it. And I just think the impact that Damien Duff has had on the league in general, that club as a whole, it's absolutely phenomenal. And I tweeted at the weekend, I think he's the best thing that's happened to our league in about 15-20 years. He's absolutely brilliant, because he's all in, he's all consuming, he's one of the best sporting I suppose footballers and sports people we've ever produced. And for him to come into our league and the profile that he has and the status that he has, and not just be in it for the sake of being in it to make a difference and be all consuming and all involved, it's absolutely brilliant. I thought they were great on Friday night.
An email landed in my phone last night, Alan, from Adrian Eames, who's producing for us today, and I was thinking, top of the shot was only my name, and I was thinking, who's on the other side? Please don't be Shane Dawson, because if it is, I'm going to listen to him rambling on about shells for about half an hour on Monday night, but thank God it was Marine Crow.
Brilliant. And the other one then, I suppose on Saturday, the FA Cup final, and we mentioned that as well, Marie. I don't know, obviously, the rumours that broke on Friday, just about Ten Hag losing his job, so I could only imagine how he must have been
feeling. That came from Chelsea, didn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know how Ruby, like, it would have been, how he would have been feeling going into that, or the team, or you're trying to prepare for one of the biggest games of your life, and for that story to break and be kind of rumbling around in the background. But the performance they gave on Saturday was absolutely phenomenal, and him in particular, Ten Hag, the way he set them up was brilliant, and we'll chat about it later. And Bruno Fernandes as well, who's much maligned as a captain. I wouldn't be too hot on him as a captain, but as a player he's absolutely phenomenal. But he left all the histrionics at the door on Saturday, played the football and was unbelievable.
Yeah, and he was pretty happy after us as well, because at least he could stand there and, when people were asking him about his job, go through what he's won, and he just won. So
yeah,
he was
brilliant.
Actually happy enough for him as well. But I do
think
wonder,
he's won
though,
more than your man at United, Alan, than your man at Arsenal.
He probably has. Yeah, I think Arteta's only won the cup, has he?
Yeah, Ten Hag has won more than him.
Yeah. And but it'd be like, I'm sure we'll get into it when we move to football chat, but it'd be very hard to sack him now.
I just wonder though, were the players playing for him, or were they playing for the fact that a new manager might be coming in?
I think they were they're playing for themselves more so as well, because all of them were brilliant.
But couldn't they be brilliant all season then, when he was under real
pressure? And to be fair, there was a moment Shearer asked him that afterwards, and that's another thing I loved. Ten Hag came out fighting and showed a bit of his personality as well, which we haven't seen. So I don't know, maybe it was just that he felt
Cup
as well.
Final victory in 1989 that saved Sir Alex Ferguson, so who knows, maybe it'll save Eric Ten Hag as well.
While we're on the subject of football, my highlight was also a football one, and that was Adam Ida scoring in the Scottish Cup final to win it for Celtic. I was just delighted for him, because he didn't have the easiest time there, and to do it on such a big stage. And I think sometimes you forget really how big the whole Celtic thing is until you're watching something like that, and you're seeing the stadium and the atmosphere and what it means to the people. And I just loved it for him. It was one of those days on Saturday when there was so much on, but if you were flicking around from the FA Cup to the Champions Cup and over to the Scottish Cup final, there was just so much going on, and it was nice for him to have that moment. And I'm going to throw in Jake O'Brien as well then, playing for Lyon against PSG again, French Cup final, massive day, huge for him. He didn't come out in the winning side, but he got a goal, and he cemented his place there as, like, he's only young, but he's a key player for them, and who knows what the future holds for him. But it was great to see him, and then Troy Parrott scoring as well, a hat-trick over the weekend. So there was lots of really good really good stories there. Amber Barrett scored, Claire Reardon scored, so loads of Irish goal scorers over the weekend.
You're going to go through them all?
Go through them all, yeah.
I thought this was a one highlight only show.
Do you realise, Marie, when you start naming names, you're guaranteed to leave somebody out?
Yeah, Irish footballer scoring goals is always a good thing.
Well, it was great for Ida. I agree with you. Brilliant. And that stage, Celtic and Rangers, you're right, people do forget how big that is. It's absolutely ginormous, Celtic and Rangers.
And even though the Champions Cup was brilliant, the FA Cup was brilliant, you're still drawn back to it. You wanted to see what was happening and how.
Why
it was
were
going.
They on the same time though?
I don't know.
Tradition.
Well, try being in London for it. It was mad trying to get to in and out of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But yeah,
what was your highlight, Keane?
Yeah, no surprise. Look, Leinster fans won't like me for saying it, but just the whole occasion. I think it was my second time at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I was there for the Champions Cup launch at the start of the season, but the first time that I was at a game there. Mm-hmm. And look, like anyone listening has probably read or heard people talking about it, and it really is as good as what everyone says. It's an amazing state-of-the-art facility. But my highlight within that was Anton Dupont's performance. Been lucky enough to see some special players playing various sports over the years, and that is one of the best that I've ever seen. It was just incredible, like to the point where if Anton Dupont wasn't playing, I think Leinster probably would win that game. It was truly phenomenal, and aspects of the game, and we can get in and chat to it in the rugby talk, but aspects of the game that we don't normally associate with a scrum half, like winning jackal turnovers, getting in the middle of a maul and forcing a turnover. He's redefined, I think, what people expect and see from a scrum half, and to witness it live was just really, really special.
So we're going to need scrum half like him.
Well, I just don't think anyone is going to see another scrum half like him for a while, because he's that unique, to be honest. And I've never seen a player in a Champions Cup final just have as much of an influence over it. Like, everyone knows how good an attacking player is. Like, this is a guy who went away and played sevens and has gone off now again today, just like Hugo Keenan actually, and is going to be preparing to play for an Olympics. But in a weird way, it seems like going off to the sevens has actually made him a better player, whereas a lot of people had worried, is this actually going to detract from him as a 15s player? Because in sevens you need to be very good around the breakdown, at tackling, getting over the ball, turning it over. And people thought maybe his attacking game might improve, and while that might be the case, he is just a phenomenon in terms of the defence, and he made a big difference.
I don't know if it was you or Rory O'Connor, but one of you were tweeting from the captain's run, and he was playing a little bit of fight side, a bit of football. He was brilliant at that as well.
Yes, he was indeed, which will come as a surprise to absolutely no one listening. Himself and Roman Entomac looked like they could be playing soccer for France. But look, some people are just incredibly talented, aren't they? And I think we're just privileged to be in the Anton Dupont era, because I think, like, he's only 27. That's a scary thing. He's probably not even in his prime yet when you think about it. So we should cherish him while we can, and it's going to be amazing to see how he gets on in the Olympics this year. You wouldn't back against France winning a medal with him in their team.
And he's 50-22 kicks into the bargain. Just tackle and ruck and pass, he can do absolutely everything, so he can. As for me, I thought the sight of the weekend was the Leeds fans before the playoff final yesterday in Wembley. It was like someone had turned on the Bernabeu with Real Madrid in their heyday. There was that many scars and it was that white, but they obviously didn't get the results. And as regards a sporting highlight for me, it came with the Curragh in the form of White Birch winning the Tattersalls Gold Cup for John Murphy, a small trainer from County Cork. His son George gives him a hand, but White Birch last year had looked a very talented colt and had a chance in the Irish Derby, but his mindset, he was very coltish, he was very unruly, and he just looks such a different horse this year. And it's a very difficult thing to do with a colt, to change their mentality, to turn them into race horses, and not allow them to think that they're actually stallions. I think they've done an incredible job with him, and he turned August Rodin over yesterday in the Tattersalls Gold Cup. And like, if White Birch wasn't there, August Rodin would have beaten Crypto Force 8 lengths, and you would have been saying, wow, August Rodin is back. Like, White Birch put him in his place. It was a magnificent training performance from the Murphys, and that was definitely my highlight of the weekend.
And overall, Ruby, a good weekend of racing?
It was a good weekend of racing. The 2,000 guineas and the 1,000 guineas both went for export. Marie Rosalian won the 2,000 guineas for Richard Hannon, ridden by Sean Levy, and Fallen Angel won the 1,000 guineas for Card Burke, the mounted Danny Tudhop. Two very contrasting rides. Sean Levy had to come from well off the pace. I thought Jamie Spencer had nicked it on half 10, but Rosalian just got there in time, whereas Danny Tudhop controlled it from pillar to post above Fallen Angel. Really slow fractions through the first five furlongs, and he won the dash in the last three.
Very good. Looked like a good weekend anyway. Let's get back to the rugby now with Cian though. okay, if we strip away the pain that Leinster and Leinster fans are going through, Cian, it was an unbelievable game of rugby.
It was. It was like, look, we had the drama obviously going to extra time. It was the third Champions Cup final ever that went to extra time, and Toulouse have won all three, which is pretty remarkable, really, when you think of it. They just have something in their DNA. They haven't lost a final, whether that's a European final or a French final, since Munster beat them in 2008. So that's nine finals in a row. And a lot was made of, you know, the fact that Leinster have had their number in semi finals over the last few years. But those games were played in Dublin, and I think it being on neutral ground in London was a massive leveler. They didn't have any fear at all, and 15-all at the end of full time, there was no try scored. And you know, on paper you'd kind of be going, well, that wasn't much of a spectacle. But honestly, I was writing the match report for the Sunday Independent, and trying to squeeze everything into 750 words was one of the hardest tasks I've had as a journalist, I have to admit. There was just like, there was try-saving tackles from both teams. There was the ridiculousness of Anton DuPont. Both defences were absolutely awesome. There was the battle of the breakdown, all these kind of things. And then extra time, it just actually went up to another level. Obviously, James Lowe gets that yellow card, which in my mind was pretty harsh, having watched it back even a few times. That was my instinct at the time. And then the game gets levelled up in terms of numerical advantage when Richie Arnold gets sent off for a dangerous clear out on Cian Healy. But ultimately, I think Toulouse just showed more composure in that extra time period. When James Lowe was in the bin, they scored 10 points, which ultimately left Leinster with too much to do. But I watched the game back yesterday, and I watched it again today, and like, I'd say the review this morning in UCD with Leinster was just not a pleasant affair, because there were so many opportunities that Leinster left behind them. I mean, 19 turnovers from a team of Leinster's quality is unheard of, really. And look, the pressure of finals playing against an absolutely outstanding team, which Toulouse are, does funny things to players. But you know, there's been a lot of talk about their attack, but when I was looking back at it, they actually put themselves in good attacking positions but just made really poor decisions and then didn't execute properly, which is just not like them at all. So they'll have major regrets. And then, you know, at the end of extra time in the second half, you look at the two penalties that they gave away, Cian Healy and Caelan Doris, and just like silly stuff from guys that you wouldn't normally expect. So they'll have lots of regrets across the board. Like three consecutive Champions Cup final defeats, I think, will threaten to leave a lot of scar tissue.
What about small things like the amount of times they went to the corner, didn't score off it, eventually had to go for the penalty, the energy wasted, five or six times they did that and didn't take the points that were on offer against a team like Toulouse?
Yeah, I'm kind of back and forth in this, to be honest, Ruby, because I was thinking back to the 2 years ago in the Champions Cup final in Marseille. I was very critical of the fact that Leinster didn't go for the corner often enough, because I felt like they were kind of giving La Rochelle an out, really, because it seemed to me like they didn't want to take them on up front. So I'm kind of like reluctant to criticise the strategy now, because that was what it was. They went into the game and said that we were going to try and take on Toulouse. But to the counterpoint is, there are times when you probably should take the points, particularly when the defence is repelling you. But I think they'll be more disappointed, I touched on it there previously, with how they executed when they actually put themselves in the position. There was a couple of line out set piece moves that didn't just go to plan. There was guys running like moves over that they wouldn't normally do. So I think when they look back, and it'll be easy to say, yeah, we should have taken the points, but I think they'll probably be more annoyed about the fact that they didn't execute when they put themselves into those positions, particularly players of this quality. So a bit torn on that one, Ruby. I know a lot of people have said, it's cup rugby, you have to take your points, but it's easy to say that in hindsight. But in the moment, and having been there at the time, I wasn't like, you know, screaming in my head saying, oh, you got to take the points here, you got to take the points here. Because if Leinster had scored off one or two of those lineouts, then we'd be having a very different conversation, because it would probably be a very different game. So it's just such fine margins.
Do they have a problem at 10?
Don't know if they have a problem at 10. It's a tricky one. Look, Ross Byrne was outstanding in the quarterfinal win over La Rochelle, and I thought he went to new heights for himself. And I was kind of thinking, wow, if he can deliver this kind of performance across the board, then the whole conversation or the question that you're asking me now, Marie, probably doesn't get asked. And he left a few points behind him in the semi-final in Croke Park against Northampton. They didn't have a poor game by any means, but not the kind of game that you'd expect. And it was a bit similar at the weekend. Look, he executed the game plan in terms of like a couple of lovely crossfield kicks. Leinster went to the aerial game quite a bit. Like, that is what Ross Byrne's strengths is. But when the attack doesn't fire, and it did not fire for the reasons that I've just outlined, a lot of responsibility has to come on the out half. Now, Ross Byrne would probably point to the fact that Toulouse absolutely destroyed Leinster really at the breakdown. And when you stop Leinster at the breakdown, it's very similar to Ireland. You just don't give the likes of Gibson Park that platform to play off. So that was a contributing factor. But it's just hard to get away from the idea that if a guy like Johnny Sexton was there, he would be demanding more from the players around him in terms of the dropped balls, the city knock-ons, the forward passes, things like that. And maybe we just didn't see enough of that from Ross Byrne. And then Kieran Frawley comes on and just added something a little bit different. Something is, look, as simple as taking the ball to the line and asking different types of questions of the Toulouse defence that they hadn't been asked maybe when Ross Byrne was on the pitch. And like, I thought Kieran Frawley did really well. He kicked the conversion an extra time. He was very unlucky with the drop goal. And I've seen people say that Leinster should have waited another couple of phases and got a little bit closer. But again, that's real hindsight stuff. I thought it was unbelievably brave from Frawley to step back in the pocket when he did. And it was just narrowly wide, because if they had gone a couple of more phases, there's no guarantee. Like, Toulouse could have spoiled the ball. Leinster could have knocked it on. And then people would be saying, why didn't Kieran Frawley drop into the pocket? So, To go back to your question, Marie, I think Leinster have a decision to make over the next few weeks, because the URC has now become absolutely imperative for Leinster. The idea of this Leinster team, given the playing squad that they have and the calibre of coaches, including Jack Nienaber, who obviously they brought in to get them over the line in these Champions Cup finals, the idea of them going three seasons without winning a trophy is a disaster for the province. Now, that might sound extreme, but that's what they will be saying internally as well. They set such high standards for themselves that they expect to win the double every year they play. And why shouldn't they? You look at the calibre player, they basically have the Ireland team. So it's a big few weeks for Leinster to try and win the URC. They've taken their eye off the ball in that, because they put all their eggs into the Champions Cup basket. They've relinquished their top two spot, which could come back to bite them, because they wouldn't have home advantage in a semi-final, potentially a final as well. But look, they'll back themselves against anyone in the URC, and it's a little bit different to last season, when the URC semi-final that they lost to Munster was a week before the Champions Cup final. Now they have a clear run. There's 4 weeks left in the regular season. They're going to play Connacht on Friday night. They're already guaranteed their place in the quarter-final at home, but they've got to get quickly back on the horse. And that's probably the best thing for them at the moment as well, is that they do have a chance to get back up to the URC.
It is a hard one for Kieran Frawley this morning, though, and I agree with you. I think he was brave enough to take it on. He misses by a split of a hair, and Kinghorn missed the penalty in the first half. But if you were Leo Cullen, Nienaber, do you go with youth going forward? Frawley, Prendergast.
The thing about it is, Kieran Frawley is 26, Ruby, so he's not.
He's not young.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to be.
That is young, lads.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be smart by saying that, but yeah. There would be a perception out there that Kieran Frawley is a young guy.
Mine included.
Yeah, but like it's because we haven't seen like a whole pile of him, you know. But
he hasn't established himself anywhere.
Well, and that's the thing. But the issue for Frawley is because he's so versatile. Mm-hmm. That is why he's getting into the team and on the bench in these big games. But if you look at how Leinster have used their tens this season, it's quite clear in my mind anyway that Kieran Frawley is at least the third choice out half. Both of the Byrne brothers are ahead of him in the pecking order at the moment. Now, if it was me, I would love to see Kieran Frawley get a run for the URC run-in at 10. But given what we've seen throughout the course of the season, there's not much to suggest that that will happen. Because look, Ross Byrne went off injured, Ruby, at the weekend, and that's why Kieran Frawley came on. But if Ross Byrne is out injured, now this week is a little bit different, because I would expect the team maybe to be slightly rejigged. But let's say for the URC quarterfinal, let's say Ross Byrne was out injured, like, form across the season would suggest, in terms of how Leinster have been picking form, I mean, would be that Harry Byrne would be the starting 10 and not Kieran Frawley. That Kieran Frawley is probably going to end up at fullback for Leinster because Hugo Keenan is now unavailable because he's gone to the sevens, even though Jimmy O'Brien is an option there. So look, Sam Prendergast is there. I can't see him featuring in the running. He's got a big decision to make whether he goes to Connacht next season. But if Leinster want to win a trophy, I think it is something they're going to have to look at. But I think Leo Cullen, being Leo Cullen and the loyal selector that he is, I wouldn't be surprised if he did stick with Ross Byrne if he's fit.
What about Hugo Keenan? It was confirmed that he is going to be going to the sevens. So he will miss the Tour of South Africa, but would he be available for Leinster's URC running?
It hasn't been clarified yet. He's going to Madrid, isn't it, this weekend with the sevens team. I would imagine Leinster are going to be trying to do everything they can to try and make sure that he's available for a potential quarterfinal, semi-final, final. I don't know if they've ironed out that kind of stuff yet. Like I said, it's just so important that Leinster win the URC, and Hugo Keenan obviously helps him in that regard. And yeah, he definitely won't play in the South Africa Tour. He's got a chance to win an Olympic medal. It's an amazing opportunity for him, and he's going to enhance their chances of doing it. But it's, I suppose, an opportunity for Andy Farrell to see someone else on the Ireland Tour. I think, interestingly, it looks like Mac Hansen isn't going to play on Friday night. He's still out injured with his shoulder injury. But if he can get back, he could be someone that Ireland might look at fullback.
And just finally then, Hurricanes fly half Aidan Morgan has joined Ulster on a 2-year contract. How big a deal is this guy?
I think he's been struggling to get into the Hurricanes team, not to dampen any of Ulster's fans' expectations, but he's not a big name signing. I think when people see young Kiwi out half, you know,
Irish qualified,
I think his grandfather is from was born in Belfast. But look, I think Ulster need a 10. Billy Burns is obviously going to Munster. I haven't been convinced by the idea of moving Nathan Doak to 10 in the bits that I've seen of him. I think he looks like a far better scrum half, so they absolutely did need depth there, and he's only 23. Looks like he's a quick 10, beautiful hands, lovely offloader, and Hurricanes have been going really well. He'll have a good guy to work under in terms of Richie Murphy, who was a former out half himself, and he's also currently working with Tyler Blaindall at the Hurricanes, who was the former Munster out half who was coming to Leinster next season. So we'll see how he gets on.
Okay, thank you very much, Keane. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us. We'll be talking hurling with Niall Moore. And after these, we'll also have Shane Stokes on the final of the Ross. And Alan Cawley is very excited to talk more football.
Game on.
Hurling.
Welcome back. Niall Moore is with us all the way from Limerick to talk about another very exciting weekend of hurling. How are you, Niall?
Great, Marie. How are you all doing out there?
Yeah, we're good. I'm not sure where to start because there's so many talking points, but we may as well start with the Munster final pairing maybe and work our way back then. So we know it's going to be Clare and Limerick. What do you reckon after the weekend's performances? How are both teams set, do you think, Noel?
Well, first of all, I think relationships in the counties are, again, on tender hooks for the next 2 weeks, Marie. We'll all have to walk a tightrope and watch where we're parking our cars and things like that.
Absolutely.
Look, ultimately, I think the three teams that came out of Munster, they were maybe as predicted. I know there's a few swings around about in the meantime, but look, to be fair, I think definitely Limerick and Clare were the two teams with most capacity to improve throughout this championship. And even watching both yesterday, you could see the scope for further improvement in them. I happened to be up at the Tipperary and Clare game, and to be fair to Tipperary players, they really died in their sword for Liam Cahill. They gave him everything that they had, and it was the least that they deserved and he deserved after the last couple of weeks. But the reality of it was, maybe in the third quarter, that Clare were just physically able to overpower them and subdue them, and Clare went into an 8-9 point lead, and ultimately they just kind of sat back in it and allowed Tipperary to get a little bit of momentum. But really, like, when you see just the capacity of Clare to improve again, we saw Shane O'Donnell, immaculate, Tony Kelly coming back into it, David McInerney probably a step closer to fitness, and again down the road in my own Limerick, so again, just having watched the game back there today, Limerick's probably best performance of the Munster Championship to date, and probably in line with how they operate, they tend to get better as they go along. Again, just maybe the caveat that injuries are in the background lurking the whole time, and small niggle again to Seamus Flanagan, so like, that would be something that I know that John will be hoping this doesn't get in the way over the coming weeks.
He seemed kind of happy though, didn't he? Very satisfied, very solid performance were the words he used, kind of very upbeat for John Kiely.
Yeah, sure, he's always upbeat, to be fair to him. He's never too high when they're up, and he's never too low when they're down. And I suppose even just listening to him, you know, I spoke even about one of the newcomers there, Shane O'Brien, his ability to read the temperament of players and read the temperament of situations. I just think he's really, really excellent at reading his dressing room and reading the general feeling. And I think he's, like, the takeaway I would have gotten from the defeat in Cork was they were just really happy with the performance for huge parts of it. Yeah, there were things that they needed to work on, but again, I just think the group, they continuously buy into the management, and the management buy into the group, and I suppose that uniformity and so that consistency of approach, and that is one thing that Limerick, like, they consistently operate at a very high level, both hurling-wise, tactically-wise, athletically-wise, and I suppose what you're probably seeing with all the other pretenders, and with the exception of Clare in my book, is that they're tending to deviate a little bit in terms of form. And I suppose, look, as we move forward, I think 2 weeks' time will be the first of two meetings this year. I think they're by far and away the two best teams in the country, and I put my neck on the line to say that it's quite possible that we'd have an All-Munster, All-Ireland to go with it, and this might be just the first installment over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, well, that would be a lot to look forward to, definitely. So that's the good from Munster, and unfortunately for Waterford, they were one of the teams to, they were the team to join Tipperary and exit the championship. Were they unlucky, do you think, or was it just a case that they didn't do enough when they had the opportunities to do enough in the championship, Noel?
The question I imagine a lot of people would be asking is, was it glass half full or glass half empty? I suppose if you take the latter approach, then they definitely fluffed their lines against Tipperary coming down the home straight. They were 4 points up at home, game sown, and ultimately that would have been enough probably to nearly see them through qualifiers. I suppose the other approach was, given that the league that they had, I suppose premised by the amount of injuries that they had, totally, I think the performance in the championship definitely exceeded the expectations of the start of the championship. Look, from the outside looking in at Waterford, I just felt that once they went direct, they have a really, really exciting calibre of hurler. But for Davey going forward, and I imagine that Davey will stay with them, and, you know what I mean, he's still probably the right fit for them at the moment. I'm not quite sure where he's going to find players to improve upon it. Like, in the background, Waterford's record at underage has been anemic, and they may pay the price for that over the next couple of years, and even in the next 12 months if they look to improve. So I suppose, look, they'll be happy with how the championship played out for them, albeit that they're out of the championship, but look, it's what's going forward. They're going to have to find a little bit extra, a little bit more talent, and I'm not quite sure where that is over the next year or two.
An uphill battle for Waterford, so moving out of Munster and into Leinster, well, Leinster and Connacht, whatever way you want to put it, where do we start? Galway, I suppose. I don't know, listening to hurling people this morning and yesterday, this was coming for Galway. Do you agree, Niall Moran?
It's coming for Galway. Again, I suppose their form has deviated. You often hear people go up to college above in Galway, given the social life that they enjoy. They often call it the graveyard of ambition, and it seems that that kind of analogy nearly seems right for managers up there. I think in Henry Shefflin, they got one of the best hurling brains in the country, both as a player and as an analyst, and obviously as a manager as well. I felt really, really sorry for him last night, to be honest, Ruby. It's been a tough 3 years. I know. Like, he would have had the last of his brother thrown into the mixer in the middle of it. And even I know that maybe having come across Brian Cody there 3 years ago, I think he found that probably hard. I think he really gave everything that he could give to that Galway dressing room. I think that he'd be very well respected. I just think ultimately they needed to find some new players to try and freshen it up. And I imagine when he went up there 3 years ago, his idea was that there would be a lot of talent in Galway that he could filter in, but ultimately when it came to yesterday, they ended up maybe with, I think, upwards of 10 guys who would have appeared in some shape or form in 2017 All-Ireland, and I think athletically they were just overrun, and again their plight wasn't helped by sending off, which in my opinion was not a sending off.
Okay, well, let's hear from Henry Shefflin now, speaking after that defeat yesterday.
You put so much into this, and we thrown everything at it. You know, we felt we had to be a little bit different this year and make the step change, and we did that. We did that with the support of the county board. We tried everything, but the more we seemed to try, the more it seemed to come back on us, and we just, as I said, it was very hard for us to catch a break, and it's just one of those years, I think.
You can hear how disappointed he is there. Do you think he will stick with the job, Niall?
I suppose, look, judging by the piece that you played there, you can sense in his voice that he probably feels maybe his time is done. But it's interesting just to note, like, that, no different to a player struggling for form, sometimes the harder you try, the more you try, you're trying to dig yourself out of a hole, and the hole just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And I know that anecdotally, listening to people around Galway, that team trained as hard as they ever would have trained. They really sacrificed an awful lot to do it, and like, do you know what I mean? I suppose yesterday was just the culmination, and things couldn't get any worse. If they ducks, they drown. If they'd they had no luck. You know what I mean? They just had nothing but bad luck. But again, you have to credit Dublin. I suppose Micheál Donoghue, and I suppose even especially probably his coach Francis Ford. I know he may not get a lot of recognition, but he's a top class coach. He's obviously coaching a ball in back in 17, and he's a great success in the meantime. I just think they played the environs in Pierce Stadium really, really well. Like, again, a big wind was blowing against them in the first half. They chose to play against it, and they used the spaces, and I suppose they stretched Galway athletically. And that's the one thing about Dublin is throughout the years, they've always had huge athletic capacity. But again, you see like Chris Comey at half back, he just gave a masterclass. He was exceptional against Kenny. He was exceptional again yesterday at Donald Burke. We've been talking about him for years on end at this stage. And even someone like Darragh Power, probably a relative unknown, comes in and gets 3 points in a major game. And like at the end of the day, I think Dublin hit the biggest score of the weekend in 227. Do you know what I mean? So they're close on the biggest score of the weekend in 227. So look, they'll fancy themselves going into an Leinster final. And I mean, have they a chance? They probably have a huge chance because Kenny are struggling a little bit for that consistency as well. Like,
yeah, you'd have to think, just watching Kilkenny so far this championship and even yesterday against Wexford, they're not fully firing. Whether they're going to get there or not, though, is another question. We know that Limerick will get through the gears at some stage, but do you think Kilkenny will?
You'd always trust them. Kilkenny, like, traditionally, do you know what I mean, that the little fuss they're trying to get through to the knockout stages and ultimately probably semi-finals. And look, the reality is, barring it, it's still going to be an upset if Dublin were to beat them. Kilkenny are going to be 2 steps away from an All-Ireland final, and we still have TJ Reid, there's still quite a possibility of his swan song. But I'm not quite sure. I just think they'll be tricks in between how they're playing. They're yo-yoing in terms of form, and I still probably believe, and maybe it's a little bit of bias on my behalf, but I just still think that looking at Limerick and Clare, I still think they have major capacity to improve. And so I was lurking in the background out of view yesterday. You had Cork, and again, like, if Cork gets to Croke Park, I mean, they fancy the wide space of it. So it is intriguing. I suppose yesterday, look, I suppose Leinster was obviously far more exciting in terms of how the games played out. While the quality is high, maybe yesterday I thought it would have been another year. Maybe not, but again, I just think we have two teams that are timing the run to the finals.
What about the relegation battle then in Corrigan Park? Antrim and Carlow, big red card after half time, before half time. Well, it happened before half time.
A lot of talking points. A lot of talking points. Was the sending off like of Chris Nolan, given the context of the Shamas that probably went down in and around us, was it harsh? I probably would think so. I'd always maybe err with favour of the player in that one. And whatever about being sent off, having to wait 15 minutes to be sent off, like, that was criminal for Tom Mullally and his management. I'm sure there were some like that. They were planning for a second half of 15, and all of a sudden you're told you're 14. So I'm not quite sure what happened in the interim there. Look, for Carlo, like, given the results that they had against Kilkenny, and now you find yourself going back into the Joe McDonagh, it's a kick in the stones kind of expression. Like, you know, it's a very, very hard one to take. But look, ultimately people are saying, well, should the championship be expanded to allow for it? It's not really going to happen. I think we have the correct formula at the moment. And look, in old money, if Carlo were in the old knockout championship, they'd have been out of the championship by now as well. So look, unfortunately they have to take it on board, but all credit to Tantrum. I suppose 4-22 in a relegation game is massive, and I suppose that's testament. Look, Darren Leeson has done an excellent job up there, and I just think maybe before we forget, or as we kind of talk of all-star teams that are coming into it, I just think James McNaughton's performance again yesterday, he had 2-3. I think he's been one of the standout players of this year's championship. And while Sancho might be fading from the limelight here, I really hope that the all-star selectors, when they sit down to pick nominations for an all-star, they better not forget this guy, because watching him there, it's just probably one of the biggest disappointments maybe for me as a hurling person, that we don't get to see more of the likes of himself and the likes of Conal Cunning and that, like, you know. So look, Antrim deserve to stay up. They had a big result obviously against Wexford, and they'll probably award the better of the two over the course of the championship.
Okay, now thanks for all of that. We'll be talking to you again over the next week or so. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us though. Alan Cawley is still here in studio, and we'll have Shane Stokes on the Ross Talchin.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We're going to turn our attention to soccer. Alan Cawley, the FA Cup final, Manchester United, Man City. Jammy first goal, but from the time they scored the second, they were always hanging on, weren't they?
Ah, they were brilliant, Ruby. They really were. Like, we obviously previewing the game and leading up to it all last week. Nobody gave them a chance.
Nobody, including yourself.
Including myself, yeah. Nobody gave them a chance, gave them a prayer. And then for that story to break on Friday, I thought that would only compound things even further when all the rumours were breaking that Ten Hag was going to lose his job, win or lose. So I just felt that going into that against the might of Man City as well, what chance did they have? But to be fair to him, if you go back, Ruby, there was a couple of weeks ago when the night City played Spurs and Postecoglou came up with a system and a formation where he played no centre forward and he basically packed and condensed the centre midfield area, and it was almost a template to try and frustrate Man City and maybe a good way to go about beating them. And Spurs nearly did that night and played very well, and City found it very difficult to play through them. Man United did the same thing at the weekend, so he left out Hoyland, played Rashford on the wing with Garnacho for the counter attacks and the pace, but he had all his players in the midfield. Bruno was dropping in out of possession. He had the two players sitting in, Amrabat and Maynou, and McTominay, who's full of energy and full of commitment as well. So I thought it was brilliant, the setup. And then they were obviously fired up and ready for it. The goal helped, the fluky goal, as you say, from Garnacho, that kind of settled them a bit, gave them a bit more belief that maybe they didn't have. And then the second goal was absolutely brilliant, and I thought Fernandes, his performance overall and the whole game was absolutely brilliant.
So are you looking at that now, are you looking at that game in isolation going, right, we have something here that Manchester United can build on, we've got some young players coming through, we've got Fernandes who, when he wants to, can be the captain and player that we need him to be?
Yeah, I think you have to look at it that way, Emery, but we've been here before because there's been a few performances like
false
that
dons.
Yeah, there has been, particularly, but I think with the young players who we've always felt you could build around, they're the real deal. Garnacho has been the shining light all year, and obviously the emergence of Maynou as well, and you look at the young kid on the biggest stage of them all and he was absolutely fabulous again at the weekend. So they are definitely two players that you could build around. Will they be looking at Rashford thinking, move him on, sell him on? I'm not so sure. Fernandes will definitely be staying, and he's one that you could certainly build things around. They do need to strengthen, but the big thing as well, Marie, that they had back, they had Varane and Martinez back centre half as well, and made a big difference. I thought Martinez was terrific as well. He'll be there next year. So, and Ten Hag has pointed to that a lot throughout the season. There has been injuries. I don't think it's an excuse that you can keep pointing to, because everyone suffers injuries, but it definitely has been a factor, the amount of times that they were without key players in that central defensive area. But I thought the weekend he deserves so much credit, and not so much, not obviously for the way he set them up, and I put it down to him, the manager, and he deserves massive credit for that, but just in terms of how he must have been feeling on a human level. Because if you're sitting in the hotel Friday night and all the reports and all the rumours are that you're going to lose your job, that must be very, very difficult to go out and face the public on Saturday and all the eyes on you in Wembley Stadium against Man City. So I thought he handled it absolutely brilliant all weekend.
But if he does stay, he surely has to go and buy a couple of midfielders for a start, because there's no one in front of that back four, whoever is playing in the back four.
Well, that's the thing, Ruby, because Marie asked a moment ago, do you look at it in isolation? But you can't. You have to look at it over the course of the season. And they've been so poor, and that's why, obviously, he's on the verge of maybe losing his job. And the areas, as you say, in that central area midfield, the amount of times teams get at them, they're so open, no protection. The amount of shots, all the stats back up, the amount of shots they've faced, the goalkeeper being the busiest in the league and all. And that's, as you say, because there is no protection in front of them. Amrabat, he's not the answer. I know he played well at the weekend, but is he going to stick around? So they definitely need to strengthen, but I think the first thing that the club needs to come out and formalise now is that the manager is either staying or going, because if he's staying, then they can put the plan in process in terms of who they might target and who they might want to bring in. Obviously they're going to cost money as well, but there's money there now, you would like to think, to bring in players. Jim Ratcliffe has already said that they will go into the transfer market and strengthen, he's aware of that. But I think you need to nail down, if the manager's going to be there, he's the one that needs to start the ball rolling now in terms of who they're bringing in, or if it's a new manager, and give them a chance to go out and get some of the players before the other clubs get them.
I'm looking at it going, could a new manager do any better than he's doing?
Yeah, 8 is poor, Marie. They've been poor. How many times have we been here on a Monday night saying they were dreadful at the weekend?
But you can't go on just sacking manager after manager after manager.
Yeah, that's a fair point as well, yeah. And that's the thing, like, after the game Saturday, it was the first time I really wanted to get behind Ten Hag, because he showed a bit of fight and a bit of spirit as well. People loved that, Marie. Like, the fans loved that when you
and
see
and he held a few scores as well, which I liked.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, we always go on about Klopp and Guardiola because it's their personalities.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To take no nonsense. Whereas I always felt Ten Hag, there was almost kind of an acceptance on his part, no matter what was happening. And his interviews were poor after matches and stuff he was saying. You were kind of thinking, what games is he watching? And people are not silly. really now in terms of the amount of data and analysis and everything. Football fans watching matches, they know themselves, and you can't pull the wool over their eyes maybe like you once could. So he has been poor, he needs to improve himself, but for the first time I thought maybe, yeah, there's a bit of life in him, there's a bit of fight, and as you said, the interviews afterwards, he was having a bit of fun with Roy Keane, but he got stuck into Shearer, which I don't mind that at all. I wouldn't be Shearer's biggest fan. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult to sack him now after that performance at the weekend.
What about a Scottish Cup final then, Celtic?
Yeah, brilliant, Ruby and Adam Aida, obviously from our perspective, brilliant to see him getting on the score sheet and coming on, and obviously the 88 minutes, such a time to score the winning goal, yeah, as well. Brilliant to double. And I said it here after the Wonder League with Brendan Rodgers, I have huge admiration for Rodgers. I think he's a very, very good manager. You're not so keen on him, Marie. I know the way you're looking
at me. I was influenced by that documentary he made after or when he was Liverpool manager, and I just thought, not sure about that decision making.
Yeah, and no, he is good. And to be fair,
he does seem like a lovely fella.
No, but he's a very good manager. And like you think as well, when he was the Liverpool manager, how close they were to winning the league. So yeah, sliding doors moments could have been very difficult, different for him. Did a good job at Leicester as well. And obviously, he's gone back to Celtic now and he's winning things again. So I think sometimes I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. And people would say, oh, well, it's Celtic and he should be winning anyway. There's still pressure on you to deliver and to do that. And Rangers have improved a little bit this season as well with their new manager coming in, so I think it was big for Rodgers to get over the line in the league and the cup.
Southampton back in the Premier League.
Yeah, again, from Irish eyes, it's brilliant with obviously the players that are there. Smallbone, who's contributed heavily, he's been absolutely brilliant for them. Ryan Manning came on yesterday. Bazunu, I know he has the injury, but he played a huge part all season for them as well. And for Russell Martin, I think he came in at the start of the season and some of the football they were playing, and they were absolutely breathtaking, the football, because of the style that he wants to play. And then the wheels almost came off and they went through a really, really tough period, got back on track towards the end of the season. And in those games, one off game like that, it's a toss of a coin. It really is, especially in that championship, because it's so competitive. But I think it's a massive blow to Leeds, like Ruby mentioned, yeah, about the fans and the scene.
I'm sure you were there.
I know what it's, yeah, like. Leeds are a Premier Division club, but that, just because you have an unbelievable fan base and you have a brilliant history, that doesn't entitle you just to be in the Premier League. And for them not to get over the line yesterday, I thought it was a massive, massive blow for them. I really fancied them, but they never performed. They didn't deserve it. They didn't play well on the day. Southampton, once they went ahead, they managed it really, really well. Reuter was very, very disappointed. Somerville, who's had a great season, took him off. He was the player of the year. Daniel James came on, added a little bit of life, had the shot to hit the bar, but they just didn't do enough on the day, and Southampton were worthy winners.
Wait, have the best team gone back up though?
In the championship?
Would Leeds or Southampton have added more to the Premier League?
I think the best team has gone up, Southampton, yeah, because they've been there all season. They finished third as well, so they were fighting out, Ruby, with obviously Ipswich and Leicester all season, and it was looking like at one point they were going to get the automatic place. And it's difficult then to finish third. Like, I always find if you finish sixth, you're probably coming in with a bit of momentum and you were never really in the run to win the league anyway. But if you're in the running to win the league and you miss out on the automatic place and you're finished third and you have to go through the playoffs, that's very, very difficult to get yourself going again and motivated. And they've come through the hard way, obviously, by doing that, Southampton. So I think the best team has gone up, yeah.
It's the 27th of May now, so we're going to record this and play it back. Bah, but the beginning of next May. Can these three teams that have gone up do better than the three teams that have come down?
I think they can, Ruby, and I'll tell you why. Because if you look at Southampton, who have huge history and heritage as well at the top level football, massive, massive club. Like, we're speaking about Leeds being a massive club, Southampton are a big club as well. So I think they're far better equipped than the likes of a Burnley, the likes of a Luton and Sheffield United. Obviously you have Leicester as well. We all know about Leicester's history and the resources they'll have. They kept a lot of their squad, which helped them win the league this year from when they got relegated. So I think those two will give a good account to themselves. The one I'd be worried a little bit about is Ipswich. But again, all the talk at the moment about Ipswich is whether McKenna will leave, and I don't think that would be a good move, Ruby. I know there's Man United knocking at the door, whoever the big clubs
are. Brighton, Chelsea, everyone's knocking on the door.
I know, but Maria, it can quickly turn. His stock is so high at the moment, and he's supposed to be brilliant. His stock is so high at the moment. He goes to a big club like that, like Man United, Chelsea, gets swallowed up after 6 months and he'd be gone out the door. His stock is all of a sudden in the bin, really. And you look at Graham Potter, something similar. We haven't heard of Graham Potter in a year.
Yeah.
Where is he?
I kept thinking he was going to turn up somewhere and he never did.
And I still think he will, and I think he's a very good manager. But when you think of him being linked with every job, going England manager, everything, haven't heard of him in a year.
Just an office in Blanchardstown looking for a fella.
he'd be a good one for Ireland, but I think we'll see him back in the Premier Division at some stage. But I definitely think with McKenna, I think he should stick with Ipswich. He's done a brilliant job. Go up, try in, as Ruby said, if they're good enough to maybe finish 16th, 17th.
He's only young anyway.
Exactly. Like, why would you be jumping? Yeah. I know financially it'll be huge for him, but all that money will come to him anyway if he's good
football
enough.
Football is so fickle. They sack managers 24/7. The Man United job will come around again. The big jobs will come around again. So,
stay at Ipswich.
Okay, Alan, thank you for all of that. We still have a few minutes to go, and we are going to focus now on the Ross Talchin. So, yesterday, Dom Jackson sealed victory at the finish in Bective in County Meath. Let's hear from Dom Jackson.
I'm super emotional. I didn't believe for big periods of that last day. I just thought it was done. I couldn't pull it back by myself, and my teammates it was like magic. They just appeared, like the chase then got going again. I don't know what to say. I couldn't pedal. My legs were in so much pain, especially the two guys on the same time were just attacking me, and I was just having to follow each one, and you just can't in the end. I can't believe it.
That's a lovely interview there with Dom Jackson. Shane Stokes, cycling journalist, joins us now on the line. Shane, a fantastic edition of the Ross Talchin, and such a close one there, and it seems a very worthy winner there in Dom Jackson too.
Yeah, absolutely. He was third on stage one and picked up time bonuses on that stage, which proved completely crucial. It was the closest ever finish of the Ross. The previous closest had been in 2006 when he had two riders, Christian House and Danny Pate, on the same time at the end of the race. And this time around, there was three riders on precisely the same time. And it's down to the time gained by Dom Jackson on that opening stage in a breakaway. And also, he picked up 6 seconds in time bonuses. So it was very tight. He was in yellow from the end of stage two and held it until yesterday's concluding fifth stage. And as you can hear, it meant a whole lot to him. He's only cycling 3 years. He's a former international rower who got injured, took up cycling, and has made really fantastic progress. And it's by far his biggest win, and he was really, really emotional yesterday.
Well, that is one way of describing progress. But Shane, I'm sure you followed the race from start to finish. On the overall,
that's right.
Crowds, the different stages that were in it. Was it a good Ross? Was it a successful Ross?
It was, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. The race stopped for a couple of years. Firstly, there was a lack of sponsorship. In 2019, I think it wasn't run due to a lack of sponsorship. And then 2020 was COVID, and it got started again in 2022. And this is the third edition of the new Ross, if you like. And it's been very, very good. Ger Campbell and his team ran a fantastic edition. It just seems to be consolidating, just in terms of financial backing as well. Like Sport Ireland and Cycling Ireland were amongst the backers, and then you had individual sponsors as well, including Bective Stud. That's where the race finished yesterday. It just seems that it's really solid now, and that gives them a chance to plan for the future and not be so concerned about sponsorship the whole time. And it just came across, it just was a really professionally run event with really good turnout and a very good atmosphere around it for the whole 5 days.
And Jane, what about Irish talent, who shone over the few days?
So Con McDonnelly and Liam O'Brien were first and second on stage two, and they ended up second and third overall. So as I said, it was the closest ever Ross. They were exactly on the same time as Dom Jackson, and it went down to stage placings and who had better stage placings. That's how the final general classification was determined. And they certainly shone. Liam O'Brien is only 19 years of age. He turned 19 this year, and he's with the feeder squad for the Little Trek World Tour team, one of the biggest World Tour teams in the world, and has already performed very well in the Flèche de Sud in Luxembourg, and he looks like to be a really good rider for the future. So he certainly stands out. There was other guys on the Irish team that stand out, and Dylan Corkery, the defending champion, didn't win this time around, but put in some really, really impressive attacks. I'd say all of those really did stand out. What was interesting was that Con McDonnelly said yesterday that he was looking back, and on stage two, which he won, he had made the decision to stop working with Liam O'Brien in the final 3 kilometres to save energy, and Liam O'Brien did the bulk of the work, or all of the work, from there to the finish. And actually what the wider repercussions of that was that while Con McDonfee won the stage, it meant that the chasing group with Dom Jackson got close enough for Dom Jackson to end that day completely level on time with them and go on to win the race. So upon reflection, Con McDonfee said yesterday that perhaps he should have kept working with Liam O'Brien on, because that could have made the difference in winning the race overall. But yeah, it was pretty dramatic, as you can imagine.
Yeah, it really was. And they're the things you learn from. Shane Stokes, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. That is all we have time for this evening. I'll be back looking at the weekend's Gaelic football tomorrow.
I hope you enjoyed that, Marie. And now I know why the owners of Bechtel stood Nona and Valerie Moore and went on the corridor to watch Zainab yesterday, because obviously they're watching the end of the Ross.
There you go. Learn something new every day. Better to sell
exactly.
Up next. RTE 2FM.